Charlie Pfeiffer was fat. He'd never married, he secretly drank, he was from somewhere like Ohio, and he painted pictures. Charlie was one of those people so heavy his car had to be altered. The front seat was derailed and reinforced, scooted back and bolted down. Nobody could ride behind him. The legroom was gone for good, and only a scarecrow of one of us kids could fit up front beside him. Charlie had a nice full head of white hair, and he should have been able to get a fat woman to marry him. Yet he didn't go with girls. Instead, he lived all by himself in a cramped, dark green travel trailer. You could sometimes smell wine on him at the Wednesday night meetings, but nobody brought it up. The church was so small in those days, we needed every male member we could get to lead prayer and serve communion. And Charlie never openly advocated the practice when the feast at Cana came up in the adult Bible class, so people let him drink in peace. He was from somewhere like Ohio and lived on some kind of pension. Whenever he wanted, he could hook up his travel trailer and move anywhere he liked. But he said the North Florida climate was good for asthma, and he claimed to be from the one true church, like us. So he placed membership with us and camped in town for the better part of a year. Maybe he wanted to capture it. People who had gone over and eaten his homemade cookies said Charlie wore a navy blue beret and held a palette and painted pictures and said, "Capture it," a lot. It got to be a good joke in church. Sometimes we shook hands with the Sunday speaker. In those days, we couldn't afford a full-time minister, so the men took turns filling the pulpit and said his sermon had certainly captured it. The preacher usually winked to show he got the joke. Then there was another good one we told about Charlie. The year before he showed up, a circus had passed through town. Their fat man, a real professional man, weighing over 900 pounds, had died on them. Some of the circus men trucked Skinny, the fat man, over to the funeral home and said to embalm him while they contacted his next of kin. But that night, the outfit deflated their tents, loaded the yellowed elephant, and left town with the lights turned off. The funeral home was then stuck with a body and no casket nearly big enough. Fortunately, when the local paper ran a story on it, Tadlock Music donated an upright piano crate. The mortician managed to winch Skinny into the box, and everybody felt considerably relieved when he was finally underground. On the Sunday we extended the right hand of fellowship to Charlie Pfeiffer, somebody at the dinner on the ground said something under his breath about needing to beg another piano crate off Tadlock. After that, any time Charlie coughed damp into his handkerchief or paws winded to lean on a pew, folks were sure to whisper behind their hand fans, "Better beg another piano crate off Tadlock." It was a good joke. I don't think Charlie ever knew about it, so it didn't do any harm. Fall came. After the first frost, Charlie rushed in with a red leaf caught in his hair and said the church ought to throw a Halloween party for the youth. People didn't like it one iota. For one thing, we were against all holidays except spiritually neutral ones like Independence Day. If Charlie was really a member of the one true church, he should have known that. For another thing, Halloween glorified the principalities and powers of the air, but Charlie acted like he'd never heard tale of the devil. He kept on after each service, circulating among the men, talking out front, selling them on the party. And finally, he wore them down. Charlie had kind of a squeaky voice and talked with his tongue stuck too far out of his mouth. You couldn't stand to hear it very long. So he finally got his way. Most families agreed to the party so long as it was labeled a youth gathering and Halloween wasn't mentioned. Charlie went off like a Roman candle. He boiled hot dogs and iced a number two wash tub of Cokes. He hung stereo speakers outside his trailer windows. He built a Go Fish booth, painting a big cardboard screen streaked with ocean currents and dotted with deep sea creatures. But not too many of us went. And it was just as well. The night of the party, Charlie embarrassed everybody to death by dressing as a beatnik. Dark glasses, fake beard, blue beret, and by playing the bongo drums. Only a few kids fished in the Go Fish booth. Most of us didn't want to get hooked to the fat man hiding behind the screen. I remember Charlie sat a long time waiting for a bite before he closed up shop and handed out all the cheap toys he'd bought. Our congregation didn't have many baptisms, mostly when somebody's child reached the age of accountability. One Sunday, the McWaters boy went forward to be immersed, and after the baptismal service, Charlie asked if he could make a public statement. In those days, there was no order to the worship, and most anybody could talk. But it always scared everybody when Charlie said anything, because you couldn't trust him to say the right things. And sure enough, this time was the worst of all. He said he'd been moved to paint a mural for the baptistry.
To glorify the gray cement block wall behind.
He would, of course, charge the church nothing for his services. A long discussion followed. Some people turned red and said images were an abomination. There were plenty of Old Testament passages to prove it. But others quietly admitted the New Testament was silent on the matter. In such cases, they said reluctantly, we could exercise our Christian liberty so long as no Bible heroes were depicted, because we did not, after all, know what any scripture character really looked like. At that point, Charlie assured us the painting would be
strictly pastoral,
meaning it would only show trees and rocks and water and such as that. A few folks were then concerned about exalting the created instead of the creator. If the scene were too perfect, they worried some might drop their eyes from the heavenly prize. Charlie said,
in a fallen world, no picture is that perfect. Shadows,
he said, smiling,
are all I have to offer.
At that, several of the women said they would not abide a dark, gloomy picture over the baptistry. Anyway, when it was finally argued out and dinner was long overdue, Charlie Pfeiffer had permission to paint. That's not to say, of course, that anybody really wanted the picture. Like every other idea Charlie dreamed up, it secretly bothered people. At each church meeting, members looked up at the curtains he had clothespinned together. Charlie wouldn't allow a viewing until he was finished. Folks talked on the phone about the picture, too.
You reckon he wears the cap in the sanctuary? You don't suppose he'll try to sneak John the Baptist in, do you?
And finally, in frustration, a few asked, how long can it take a human being to paint 1 6-by-8-foot wall? The answer turned out to be 3 months. On the Sunday the mural was finished, Charlie asked to give a special talk explaining
the rich symbolism of the scene.
It was a time of illness in the congregation, and most of our regular pulpit men had the flu, so Charlie was given the go-ahead. He jerked the curtains back, then stood and stared, as if he too had never seen his picture before. After a hush, the major noticed the sputtering of a bad fluorescent tube overhead. Charlie started his talk. Nobody had ever heard anything like it. A cloud was pointed out. It was supposed to look like an open hand, but the fingers were way too long. Charlie said it was
the Lord's everlasting mercies.
What a creepy hand like that had to do with mercy, he never explained. Then there was a stream overflowing like a cracked culvert, puddling up close to the audience. Charlie got kind of wild-eyed and in a borrowed baritone shouted out,
living water! Let all who thirst drink!
You can imagine how the talk went from there. To hear Charlie Pfeiffer tell it, every tree or rock was supposed to be something different, something that actually had nothing to do with trees and rocks. I don't remember all the rich symbols Charlie explained for us that day, but it was a talk we discussed for a good while afterward, and it was sort of informally agreed upon that Charlie must be kept out of the pulpit for his own good. As things turned out, Charlie never asked to preach again anyway. He left town not too long after his picture was finished. Somebody, and later we could never pinpoint exactly who, accused him of bathing in the baptistry. That is, while he was working on the wall. The news went out over the congregation's telephone tree, and a special midweek meeting was called. This may sound crazy to you, but that's because you never saw Charlie Pfeiffer. Just think about it for a minute. A man his size could have never fit into the stand-up shower stall of that travel trailer. People who had gone over and drunk Charlie's imported teas had always wondered how he kept himself decent in such cramped quarters. And then there was the physical evidence. At the special meeting, displayed on the communion table where everybody could see them, were a stick of deodorant and a half-empty bottle of baby shampoo. They had been found on the steps leading into the baptistry. Charlie was not at the meeting, but the men, the ones who went over to his trailer and confronted him with the thing, later said he insisted,
"The shampoo was for the sable paintbrushes, and the deodorant."
Well, Charlie laughed and said he couldn't stand to smell himself when he toiled for the Lord. In other words, he denied the whole thing. The men who went out to see him were generous and said they would abide by his version. But Charlie must have felt guilty, or maybe he got mad after he thought it over, because sometime before the next worship service, he unchalked the trailer and pulled out for other parts. That same year, our treasury reached its goal, and we were able to stucco the meeting house. While we were at it, we decided to repaint the sanctuary. The women settled on mint green. It's good for the eyes. And just for fun, the ones who roller painted over Charlie's mural timed themselves. It took less than 6 minutes to cover up a wall Charlie Pfeiffer had spent 3 months of his life on. For a long time after that, whenever there was a baptism, I looked at the green background and tried to make out marks of Charlie's old picture. The paint had gone on good and thick, but some outlines still showed through. You could sort of see a trace of the hand, or the cloud, or whatever it was, if you held your head just right.
A slight twist of words in a crowded room. A knife that cuts right through your soul. A careless flare of anger on my worst of days that rendered you alone. Actions simply rooted in my selfishness that overtakes any thought of you. And as you turn away from me, I see your hurt. I know what I must do. In the valley where I stand, I open up my hands and ask you once again, will you forgive me? The pain I know is great from the wounds that I have made. I hope I'm not too late. Will you forgive me? I stand before you now. Will you forgive me? And I see all the times I've hidden my face from my God, whom I've transgressed and need his grace. And then he holds me in his arms and takes my hand. With my eyes fixed to the ground, I say, once again. In the valley where I stand, I open up my hands and ask you once again, will you forgive me? The pain I know is great from the wounds that I have made. I pray I'm not too late. Will you forgive me? I bow before you now. Will you forgive?